Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Tabletop Game Talk. Wow, a whole year. A show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about our favorite games of the last year. What games do we keep going back to over and over? You'll find out soon. But first, a huge thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gier, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patrons, Jason Marks and Jeremy Fisher. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. And congratulations on making it to 52 episodes.
I know, one whole calendar year.
Calendar year.
That is a real milestone that, you know, every podcast should really savor and enjoy and kind of mark off and just say, wow, we did it a whole year.
Yeah, you could also count 50. 50 is a good number.
50 is all right. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I don't know. Whatever.
Kitty has no opinion on the subject whatsoever.
Not at all.
All right. Well, quick announcements. We are right in the middle, actually near the tail end of our Raxxon contest. You have, as this podcast drops, 3 more days. That's Friday, August 18th, to have your entry in. We will announce the winner at 6 o'clock, Friday 18th Central Time. So I'm cutting it off at around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. There will be 2 winners, and both of you will receive a Raxxon kit, they call it. So you can join the fight against the zombie viruses, or the virus that makes zombies or something.
You don't... What?
I don't know. That's just what it is.
Okay.
It's Dead of, you haven't even played Dead of Winter.
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God.
But it doesn't sound like you have either, the way you're...
Here, we can go to the official email.
The official email? Oh, the Raxxon official email?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They sent us an email reminding us that you have these things to give away.
And it's so exclusive. You have to be invited to get this game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So you may never see it if you don't win this contest.
One of the chosen few you will be.
Do you have the email?
Yep. I'm just looking at the reminder one, though, and it's not as exciting as the first time one.
Something that is more exciting, as Kitty looks up our email, this is the last time that I'm going to mention our Gen Con live show. Like, that should be exciting. We've been talking about it for probably months now.
Yeah.
Definitely months now.
But I will give the exact details because I figure someone's listening to this episode and they're going to the live show. They might want to know where it's at. So it is August 18th. That's Friday. 6 p.m. It's in the Crown Plaza, Pennsylvania Station B is where we're at. It's a seminar room, 40 seats. Tickets are required, but they're free. There's about maybe a dozen left right now, so grab some. If you don't get a ticket, though, still show up. Maybe some people won't be there, and we're not kicking anyone out. You just might have to stand. If you do have... The first 40 people are going to get a little pin with a number written on the back, though, and everybody's going to walk away with something, because if you listen to the last episode, I have a lot of games to give away. So that should be fun. Kickstarters. I backed 2. The first one was Diesel Demolition Derby. This is a tactical drafting card game for 2 to 6 players, an underground fighting league for the diesel punk mechs in a society in crisis. This one looks pretty cool. So it's actually done by the same person that did Elysium, which is a highly regarded game. I have not played it, but looking at this game makes me want to.
Elysium, is that in any way tied to that film with Matt Damon called Elysium?
I don't think so.
I think I think it's a Roman word. Latin. It's from Latin. It means it's a thing.
So it's not set in the same world or anything?
No.
Okay.
But it's a cool name.
It is a cool name.
But yeah, so that's Matthew Dunstan. And so he did this. Now, this game starts at only $19 for the base game. It's a drafting card game where you are, like, you know, 10 to 20 minutes battling simultaneously, playing cards, making robots fight each other, essentially. The deluxe version is $33, and I'm like, okay, I can do this, because it even comes with little Metal Gear tokens that you can use for the game and stuff. So this one was, it drew my eye, and apparently I'm into card games, because the other one that I backed is called Awful Fantasy Adventures. Now, normally you want your fantasy adventures to be not awful,
right?
But this one's kind of, their tagline is a quick and ridiculous self-expanding cooperative adventure game for 1 to 4 players. Starts at $25, goes up to $49 to get a copy of this game, plus there's 2 other games in the same universe. One is just a card game and one is a Dungeons and Dragons adventure set in the same universe. But the interesting thing about this game is it's kind of a card game with a legacy component. So you get packs that have stickers that you put in the rule book that change the rules as you add new expansion packs to the game.
Huh.
And it's a cooperative game on top of that. And it looks like quick, fun, easy to learn, easy to play.
What's an adventure card game?
Basically, Arkham Horror could be considered an adventure card game. So it's or Adventura. You haven't played either of those.
No.
Actually, Firefly. Okay. So Legendary Encounters could be considered an adventure card game.
Oh, okay.
So it tells a story. And, you know, Firefly is a deck building game. This one is not deck building. It's more of like you have a deck, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
It's just like you're going through an adventure while you play the game.
But the mechanics itself is still, you know, what you imagine to be a kind of deck buildery type. You know, you've got points and you're kind of fighting things and attacking and defending and stuff, right?
Yes. Yep.
Right.
So depending on the type of game, but this one looks like that. It looks like your traditional fantasy game.
Gotcha.
Who's curious about the origin of the word Elysium?
I guess I am.
I totally am.
It is a Greek word. I was wrong. It is a concept of the afterlife developed. It is separate from the realm of Hades or the underworld where the heroic gods or righteous end up.
Ooh.
Better than just the regular old underworld.
We always strive to teach you something here on the Tabletop Game Talk podcast.
Learning
even after 52 weeks, we still have something to teach you.
Yeah, we're never going to dumb down, guys.
Never, never.
Not as long as I have Google on my phone.
Josh, do this whole segment thing.
Oh, yes. Well, let's go to some feedback about past episodes. And if you have some feedback about this or any of our previous episode, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
We got a ton of feedback.
We really do. And our first one is from David on organizing your games. He says, I have way too many games and would love to purge, but I also have a large collection of old games I've collected over the years. These never get played, but I love having them in my collection. Just typing this makes me sound like a hoarder. I'm debating putting some of these into storage unit where they'll be safe, but out of my house.
Yeah, so I actually put a couple little cubbies aside for games that I know I'll never play again, but also games I know that I don't want to get rid of.
Oh,
nostalgia games. I think that's completely
valid. What
fall
into that category for you? I'm interested now.
The Harry Potter Lego game.
Oh. I didn't even know this was a thing.
You can't buy it. It doesn't, it's completely out of print. It's Legos. It's actually a pretty good game.
Okay.
So Lego did a series of games. I don't know if they still do them or not, but there were games that you'd put together with Lego pieces, and then you have the game book and you just play it as like a family board game.
Okay.
The Harry Potter one was one of them, and like I said, I don't know that I'll ever pull it out and play it. I think actually we might have to after this podcast just because it plays pretty short.
Right.
And it's really you're trying to get back to, or you're trying to get four different artifacts, I think. So you're going around the board and there's like moving staircases. So there's like little sliders made of Legos that you're trying to slide your way around Hogwarts and gather all the artifacts to become the House Cup champions.
Sounds kind of unique.
Yeah. So like that one's not going anywhere.
Nice.
Well, it's not a classic game of Risk or a classic game of Stratego. It's like the modern versions of the classic game.
Okay.
I own both of them. I'm not sure that I'll ever play them. Stratego is fun in concept, but when you're actually playing it, unless someone's like really, really into it, you have to be like, both sides have to be really into it.
Right.
It's just kind of like, okay. And then Risk, I would never play with you guys. Not when I have Risk Legacy I could play instead.
Oh, yeah. It's all about Risk Legacy these days.
I like Risk Legacy.
You only played it once.
Yeah, and they changed the win conditions, and I didn't like it.
Actually, the modern version of Risk has, quote-unquote, three ways to win, and one of them is the victory point one that speeds up play. So, but yeah, I get it. It's not classic. But anyway.
It's not Risk.
David.
The way I play it.
That is true. But David, I feel you. Keep your games. Don't put them in a garage or a storage unit. You don't want them to get like musty and moldy. Cool, dry place.
Well, you can get like the really nice storage units that have like climate controlled up on the second floor so it won't flood.
No, you could do that. Oh, God. That's the only way that you can store your board games.
I think the rent for those in the city of Chicago is more than a one-bedroom apartment.
I was going to say.
Well, it's definitely more than a one-bedroom apartment in most other places.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. It's like, I don't know, $250 a month.
Wow.
It's crazy. All right, Kitty.
All right, from Aaron, also on organizing your games. Having just listened to your episode, Chris mentioned the shifting the games from the left to the right. There's a thing that I've seen, and I'm about to start myself, called box topping. A box top is after every game, you write down the winner if it's competitive or if you won for a cooperative game and the date. That way you can not only give your copy a little bit more personality, but you can also tell how often a particular game comes out. Example, Pandemic Legacy comes out once a week, whereas Mega Civilization comes out once a year, and so on. It does make it harder to give / sell off, though, in the negative.
Yeah. And then Terrence added that you could just put sticky notes in the box top so that you could get rid of them if you ever wanted to give the games away. So box topping, I think, I don't know if it was clear, but it's like literally taking a Sharpie and writing on the inside of the game box, on the top of the box, so you could like keep track of, you know, your games in the box. I think that's kind of a cool idea. There's a lot of, like, Board Game Geek allows you to keep track of games. You go to the site, you log your plays. There's external, like, journals and stuff that you can log your plays. I kind of like putting it in the game.
Yeah, having it there makes it a lot easier to do. If it's something that takes an extra step of going online, opening up an app on your phone even, it's not going to get done as often, I feel like. If it's right there, especially if you've got pencils, pens at the table, super easy to take care of.
Yep.
Well, plus, even if you remember to do it on BoardGameGeek, I wouldn't then remember to check it
later,
you know, later on. It would just sit online somewhere and I wouldn't look at it. So, yeah, I really love that idea.
Yeah. It's actually, so you can get custom Post-it notepads made up and in various different sizes. So I might actually go to Vistaprint, get like a 4x6 big pad and have it printed up with like name, date, you know, win, loss, whatever. Oh, and then anytime I open a new game, that one goes on the top of the box. And then I don't have to write on the box, but I have this nice little sheet that I can write
even
on and keep
better,
track of.
Don't tell anyone else other than our listeners about that. Make your own versions of that and go to conventions and sell them. People would love that. I think you're going to make a million, man.
At least a million.
Especially if you did it with the Post-it note kind of glue, but not the ones that just have the edge, because then it would constantly be flopping down. The ones that it's like all sticky note.
Oh, I got to track this.
Mind
blown. That, yes. All right. So,
new business idea.
Aaron, if we make a million, you'll make a tenth of that million finder's fee.
10th. Well, let's negotiate with him first. We're rushing into this verbal agreement too quickly.
I'm not really sure what billion we're making, though. It's certainly not $1 million.
It's happening. But it's happening. I believe in us.
It's just like when you make a bet for $1 million doll hairs.
Doll hairs.
Third grade was terrible.
Josh, save us.
Okay. So we have one from Jason Marks. He says, in the listener feedback episodes, you were asked about games that you'd like reskinned into another theme. I have a couple that immediately come to mind that I figured I could share. One, I would love to see a Gloomhaven or Gloomhaven-like game with a cyberpunk reskin. You can have character types like hacker, cyborg, etc., and be people navigating a turbulent city and the areas around it while leveling up and learning more about the setting. Oh, I quite like that. I think the video game Deus Ex comes to mind in the early 2000s. I loved that game, the very original one. And I could see myself getting into a world.
Yeah, like basically a sci-fi Gloomhaven would be really cool.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be cyberpunk or even, you know, space station or space in general.
Well, I think Gloomhaven really lends itself well to being reskinned because it's basically an RPG. So anything that you have in RPG world, it would be real easy to reskin into that.
Yep. And that character progression and the puzzling nature of the scenarios are really what like keep the gameplay fun, but the story is what keeps you coming back and like you're unlocking stuff in that story. So you could really set it anywhere. And I would play it for hundreds of hours.
Perfect. Well, he goes on, number two, I would also like to see a reskin of Mansions of Madness to expand beyond the Cthulhu environment and go into a variety of scenarios with different inspirations. Essentially, I'm thinking this could become a replacement for Betrayal at the House on the Hill and can repair many of the issues people have with that game.
Yeah, I think Mansions of Madness has a really cool core mechanic to it, especially second edition, where you are, it's almost full co-op now, where you're playing against an app, where the original Mansions of Madness is one versus many. Okay. Betrayal on House of the Hill, like, a lot of people either love it or hate it. It can be really super swingy, because if you're the traitor, and depending on what you are, what scenario comes up, and, you know, it can be a little bit unbalanced. But I'm kind of hoping that the new version, which is Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, which is the D&D retheme of Betrayal on House of the Hill, will also fix some of those things. Because then if you have more streamlined scenarios and you don't have as, you kind of remove the broken ones, that could solve that problem too. Nice. Speaking of retheming, you can retheme anything D&D and I'll play it.
You can retheme anything D&D and I won't play it. All right. From Jeremy via Patreon. I've been listening to your podcast since episode 36, Campaigns and Legacy Games. I recently went back and listened to every episode. I'm new to tabletop games. I only started building a small collection when Tabletop by Will Wheaton came out. I'm 42 years old and spent my youth playing RPGs, second edition D&D, White Wolf Games, Star Wars, West End, etc., and gaming on the console and PC. Your podcast is very informative and one of my favorites. I would also like to thank you for Hello from the Magic Tavern. Anyway, keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jeremy, and thanks for being one of our newest patrons. Also, thanks, Jason, for also being a patron. Every once in a while, I like to put stuff that where people say, you're great. But one of the things that just fascinates me and humbling more than anything else is when people go back and they like listen to all of the episodes.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, because we do that, we're just listening to episode zero before we started this
to commemorate a year.
And we're like, wow, that we've came a little ways from that.
Yeah, it sounds a lot different now.
Yeah, so hopefully we're
to remind everyone I wasn't a part of that.
No, you got
episode four
is where I show up.
Although I think technically you've been on more episodes than Josh has.
I think
that's possible.
If I was going to count it, it's neck and neck. But and yes, Hello from the Magic Tavern. I still like. I'll usually wait for like three at a time and then binge listen to them. For those who have not listened to when we were talking about Hell from the Magic Tavern, which I think was in the early teens or something like that.
And we brought it up again on episode 50.
And did we?
Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, because we were asked for our other podcast recommendations.
Oh, right. Yep.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of podcasts on episode 50. We did. If you are looking for recommendations, go check it out.
All right, so the two sentences. Chicago Improv Group, who does a podcast about being stuck in a foreign fantasy land.
It's funny.
It is not suitable for kids.
Nope.
At least not young kids. All right. I think we have one more.
Yep.
We do. Sam wanted to share a real conundrum that I felt myself in this week. After you mentioned Who Goes There, the Kickstarter game, I looked into it and felt very drawn to back it. But after reflecting on the Board Games Collection episode, I had to debate how much did I really want it? I watched several YouTube playthroughs of the game and debated the question over the course of a week, all the way down to the last 2 hours of the Kickstarter. Eventually, I had to not back because the developers stated that the game plays best at 4 or 5 players, and I had to reflect, how often can I get 5 people who'd be interested in playing a game that, in my mind, is a mix of Dead of Winter and Resistance, enough together to play the game for 2 hours? Also, just for kicks, I looked up the games on Indiegogo of the other day, and saw a lot of games that had been on Kickstarter are on there now. I imagine that there isn't any exclusivity contracts on either site, but I wasn't sure how I felt about that phenomenon.
So two things. First, Dead of Winter meets Resistance means awesome.
That sounds awesome.
But I do agree. If you don't have a group of people that like social deduction games enough to sit down and play a 2-hour board game, it's probably not the right game for you. I happen to have groups of people that were 4 or 5 people. We want to play social deduction games, but that's too small for a traditional social deduction game, because 5 is really the low end of what you could do with Resistance. So this kind of fits that small group social deduction niche for me, which is why I'm looking at it. But yeah, if you don't even get to 4 or 5, it's not worth it. But I did want to also comment on Kickstarters and Indiegogo. I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing. So I know that Kickstarter is not the most publisher-friendly friendly crowdfunding platform. They take a decent percentage of the money earned. There's a lot of rules and stuff. And like things like Indiegogo are a little bit more relaxed with that. So I guess it doesn't really bother me if they're going to fund on two platforms. Ultimately, if you, you know, find 500 people on Kickstarter and 150 people on Indiegogo, great. Like,
right,
you gave 150 people more a chance to look at it. Maybe they're anti-Kickstarter, but they're okay with Indiegogo. Right. So I think it's actually kind of an interesting move. I was not aware of this phenomenon. I don't go to Indiegogo to look for new games. But I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing per se.
No, I think all competition's good. Why not?
Yeah. So, all right, Kitty, I think we have a question.
We do. From Jason Strong, a question I've been thinking about, and maybe you could address this, is this. What is your take on first impressions on a game? Does it take only one play to tell whether you like a game or not? Should it? For instance, my game group and I were playing Guilds of London for the first time. So we were all basically learning the game for the first time during our first play. I just happened to try a strategy that focused heavily on endgame scoring, so much that it vaulted me to victory. As we were putting the game away, one of the others in the group said that that took his opinion of the game from a 9 down to like a 4 on what I'm guessing is a 1 to 10 scale. Was that fair? Should we judge the game on its first play? Although I admit there are some games where you can probably tell you're not ever going to like it. Or does it take a couple plays to get a good feel for whether or not you truly like it or not after you've gotten to learn the mechanics and see some of the strategy, etc.?
So what do you guys think?
I think like anything, actually, your experience can be colored one way or another by a variety of different things. Like it can even be like if you haven't eaten dinner and you can be just grumpy because you haven't slept a lot, you can maybe not like the game. So I think you should always give it more than one play, because you never know what it was. I mean, I'm a bad loser. So if I get beaten and I get crushed in a game, I've had a bad experience, and that's going to color my view of the game. And it's happened in many games where I initially didn't like it. And then once I got the swing of it and stopped losing so badly, then I'm like, actually, this is a really good game.
I think that it can go both ways. Some games, I agree, you know, this isn't my type. I'm never going to get into it. I don't want to play it again. Especially games that it takes longer than an hour to play. Like, you've had enough time to understand the mechanic. Like, especially if you're learning it as a group. If you're the only novice player, maybe give it a second chance. But if you're, like, learning it as a group and, you know, by the end of an hour and a half, you're like, nope, not for me, I'd say, yeah, you don't have to spend another hour and a half on that game.
Yeah. I would say it also depends a little bit on experience level, which is funny because I'm going to answer with, yes, I judge games on the first playthrough all the time. So Josh has the lowest amount of experience here, and Josh is like, no, you should always play it again. Right. Kitty's kind of in the middle, and she's like, yeah, it depends, I can go either way. And I'm like, nope, I'll just definitely judge it from the first time.
Right.
But the reason I'll judge it on the first time is because I played enough games,
yeah,
where I can relate it to different things and I can see the elements I like or dislike in it. So if there's something there I like, then the strategy didn't work out or I lost or something, then I'm not going to judge the game based on the fact that I'm bad at it. But I may base it on this mechanic just doesn't do it for me. And I know that because these other two games I played with the same mechanic also are not my favorite.
You've got that experienced eye to know what you're looking for and to know whether this is actually a decent game or not. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think we can also really be colored by theme sometimes, yep, during the first playthrough. I know I've been guilty of this. I'm way less likely to enjoy a space game than I am to enjoy other kinds of games. I think it's the exact opposite from Chris.
Yeah. Well, and you just mentioned anything D&D and you don't want to have anything to do with it.
I'm not entirely against D&D, but I am really sick of playing like, oh, if you like this game, we have that exact same game, but D&D. It's like, come on.
I want to do an entire episode on D&D themed games. So, because I will say, Betrayal on House of the Hill is the first one that's actually been a full retheme. Most D&D games are unique to that license, and they're not a rethemed game. So, I think it's interesting, though, because D&D has almost as many board games as it does 5th edition books right now.
Wow.
So, it's a different direction they're going in. All right, let's get on topic before we never make it.
In this episode, we're talking about our favorite games of the last year. Chris said we'd each had to come up with our favorite game in three different categories. We haven't compared lists, so let's do that now.
Yeah, so favorite games. We did, was it January? Our first week of January, we did our top fives. So this really isn't a top five episode. But what I was thinking about is in the last year, we've played a lot of games. And the games that I find that I want to play over and over again have like new games that are like I want to talk about. And a few of them have come up on the podcast before. I will say right off the bat, Gloomhaven, I've played easily over 100 hours. It's definitely one of my favorite games. It's going to come out in retails probably September-ish, so keep an eye out for it. If you are interested in that fantasy character building, unlockable stories, not necessarily achievements, but like always getting making progress towards the next game, legacy style, Gloomhaven is the game. That's all I'm going to say on it because I've said enough of it on it on other episodes.
And can I clarify something? Because I assume this to be in the last year games we've played, not necessarily games that have come out in the last year. Right?
That's how I read it.
Yes. Yes. Right.
In the last
just
year
checking
games
we were
we've
all
played.
On the same yeah. page.
We've covered, so we might throw out some old games, but they're new to us this year games.
Yeah.
And I or think, they've just come to prominence in the last year.
And I'll say a lot of them of the games I'm going to talk about are probably within the last 18 months, so a year and a half, but that is not a requirement.
Yeah.
I think most of mine are pretty new.
I don't think mine are, some of them are new and some of them are not. I think it's a mixed bag.
Well, Josh, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm gonna start with one that I think people will be very aware of and is definitely an older game, but I've really grown to love more and more, and that is Splendor, the App Edition. and it's such a simple game. Like, it's not like your crazy big box Gloomhaven with all these like rules and stuff. It is so elegant and simple. You know, it's a kind of game that's your engine building. And you can play it solo as well. And that's one of the reasons I'm loving it so much is that I can take it anywhere on my phone. And even when I like lose signal, lose the internet, I have this game and I just get sucked into it. And I'm totally focused on playing. And for me, I find it difficult in point salad-y type games to kind of focus on engine building. And so when you have such a simplistic mechanic that really strips it down to the very basics, I mean, essentially they're just colors and you're just accruing more colors into your bank that will then allow you to gain like higher points cards. And it's so simple, but it allows me to get in that mindset. And I've really enjoyed it. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, especially the app version, because it takes maybe 10 minutes to play a game, 15.
Yes.
And then all the challenges on there as well that you can do. It's just really addicting. I played through every challenge on that app, and then I'm like, okay, now I got to move on to something else. But no, I totally feel it.
I also had one of my favorite games as an app on my list.
Which is?
Pandemic. Because I am gearing up for Pandemic Legacy Season 2. I am so excited and I am determined that I will be really good by the time Pandemic Legacy Season 2 comes out. I'll be able to be like, all right, guys, I've got this. I know what to do in this situation. And I have been playing through all the challenges on the app there where I'm trying to beat it in all the different modes with all the different characters and all the different complexities and levels. So
I think it's
totally set.
I'm liking that.
I think it's interesting because Splendor this isn't recent. I don't know that there's any modern board game I'm playing right now on the tablet. But like Lords of Waterdeep was a game I played a lot. But those games that are in digital form, which is an exact port of the board game, you can play them so many times that they just kind of like bubble up to like, this is my most favorite game because I played it 15 times this week.
Well, often there's a half-life with these things where you are getting better and better, and that's part of the enjoyment. You know, it sounds like Key, you're just kind I've just got to get that little bit better. I've got to beat these scenarios a little bit quicker, go on to the harder puzzles within the app. And I can agree with that. It's definitely something I saw with the Splendor app as well, was like, I'm getting better and better at this game. And in fact, we all played a round not too long ago and I won because I'd been playing so much.
Yeah.
And it really pays off. So I am looking forward to Pandemic Legacy Season 2.
Well,
that's you should get it on your iPad, both of you, so we can all be really good. And Spencer will just be like, what happened? That we're all just killing it this season.
Well, have you read anything on Season 2 of Pandemic Legacy?
No.
Ooh, there's rumors and stuff leaking out already.
There are. Ooh. Yeah. It happens several decades in the future.
Oh, I like
and
that.
And
like
essentially, that. You start out on a platform in the ocean and you're like coming back on to mainland and like dealing with what's there.
I see. So basically, it's kind of like the people who survived, they went out into the ocean and like let the disease ravage the world. Yep. And then they're like, what's happened?
And now you're going back.
That's such a cool idea.
So it could be totally different. Also, speaking, Pandemic Legacy is a sequel to your favorite iPhone, iPad, tablet game. Josh, there's an expansion to Splendor coming out at Gen Con.
Really?
City of Splendors. It's City of Splendor. It's two mini expansions. So it's an expansion that has two different add-ins that you can mix into Splendor.
I'm totally on that. So yeah. I might have to actually buy a copy of Real Splendor.
Well, I think the copy of Real Splendor, I just love the poker chips.
Yes.
It does have a feel to it.
They have a good feel to it. So my first one is the only one that was part of my top five of the ones I'm going to talk about today, and that's Mechs versus Minions. So when it was my top five, I had played it twice, I think, and I just like, I know I really love this game because it has all the things and flavor and of games I like. And over the past couple months, I was able to play through the entire campaign. So Sydney and I were playing with some friends of ours and they came over, you know, a couple Saturdays in a row where we just play like four or five missions in a row. This game is really, really fun. There's like, I want to say 10 or 11 missions that you play through. And as you unlock these missions, it unlocks different scenarios and oftentimes different rules. When you get to the very end, you unlock something that allows you to continue to play the game in different ways. I won't spoil it. I'll just say that it doesn't stop at 11. And the idea here is it's programmable movement. So you're drafting cards that are your program movement. Your mechs are like take damage and then sometimes are going wonky out of control and you're stepping on minions all over the place and you're shooting in random directions and you have to meet some kind of goal, whether it's like drag a bomb over some repair pads or capture the crystals or whatever the case is. There's like so much going on.
Wow.
It's mostly simultaneous. Well, it's simultaneous as you're like drafting cards and you're trying to pick all these things. And then you just kind of go and you follow your path and then all the minions spawn and there's so many. I like Mechs versus Minions.
Is this a co-op game?
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
Yep. It's a 2-4 person co-op. We were playing it four people.
Yeah.
I would say 2 and 3 players is really hard, though, because the game itself doesn't really scale as the number of players do, short of you get more cards if you're a smaller player count. So you draft 4 cards every round, regardless of the number of players. So if you're 2 players, you each get 2 cards every round. That's okay. If you're 3 players, you're still only getting 1 card most of the time, and you're down a mech. So like 3 players is the hard level to play it at.
So wait, 3's hard, 2's easy. What about, you said it's
4 is the easiest. 4 is the easiest. I would say it's 4, 2, then 3 is the difficulty.
And what does it go up to? How many people can play this? Okay, 4.
Yep.
Okay.
And the production quality on this is just insane. Like $75 and it's just a box of gloriousness and all the cool pieces and inserts that I have not thrown out. When I went through all my games, I threw out a ton of inserts. Will not throw the inserts out for this. Everything packs up back in the box perfectly, even after everything's open. It's fantastic.
Wow. So, I'm excited to play that at some point.
I might run you through a couple.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's do it. All right, Josh, what else you got?
Oh, I've got to get my list up again. It's gone dark. Damn you, iPhone. Not iPhone. Android. So, Burke's Gambit, ooh, which actually, you're going to have to... This is going to sound really bad. You're going to help me explain because it's been a while since I've actually played it and I've only played it a couple of times just in one session, but I really loved the game when I played it. I mean, the general gist is that it's a social deduction game, but it has some more mechanics to it. So you're on a spaceship and there's some sort of alien, think like the Thing that can kind of morph into, you know, possess someone's body and morph into someone on the ship. And your role isn't attached to whether you're infected with this alien or not. You can either be good guys who are just on the ship, or I think you're the corporation of the bad guys.
Yep.
So there's a mix of that between the table, but then someone is also infected. And I think if you're the good guys, you just want to kick out the infected alien thing before you get back to Earth. And if you're the corporation, you want to keep it on board so that you can like study it or something.
Yep.
But the cool thing about it is like some of these social deduction games are just going off pure guesswork. You know, there's no real mechanic or information that allows you to kind of work out who is who and what is what. But with this, you actually have some mechanics involved that allow you to start figuring things out and puzzling it out with a bit more accuracy. And for that reason, I felt like it played better than just your standard werewolf. And what did you think about it?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And there's a dice mechanic, too. You have a dice bag, so you're drawing dice. There are, I want to say, 7 types of dice where... And each type has, like, 3 dice that go along with it. Most of the faces on all of them are the same. One face is different, and it gives you a special power based on that die that you might roll. So you roll the die, and you can take the particular action on there. You can re-roll it once if you want to. You can also save it for later if you want to do that. So there's a lot of, like... playing around with those mechanics. Like, Kitty, you said this was a social deduction game that you didn't actually mind that much, right?
Well, I had a really hard time with the way it was being taught. I felt
that was my fault, sure.
I felt very much like, well, so I was playing it with Chris and Sydney had played before, and we had 4 other players who had never played before. And Chris was trying to give kind of directions, but I felt like he was giving them exclusively on my turn. And it was always, if you're bad, you should do this. And if you're good, you should do this. And it made me very much not want to do the bad thing, because then it felt like I was outing myself, even if that was the right move, because Chris just said, like, this is what the bad guy will do. I didn't want to do exactly that. So I tried to go for like this middle ground. I just ended up playing a really weird game and getting very frustrated. But classic I could see Chris. How... it might be more fun, but it still hasn't hit, like, still isn't going to be my, like, go-to favorite. It's not on my list, for sure.
Well, it was on my list, but it's not anymore, because Josh stole it. But no, I really do like this game quite a bit, and I find that it's one of those games where the first time you play it, you shouldn't be trying to win. Like, I'll still teach it where, and I'm not saying, if you're bad, do this, if you're good, do this, I'm saying... if you're bad, your goal is this. If you're good, your goal is this. Because it can be confusing. Like, if I'm infected, which you can never know if you're infected directly because you can never check yourself. But if I know who's infected and I'm bad, how does that help me? Well, what helps you is you know who to kill, because you want that virus to be completely random. So at the end, nobody knows where it's at. So, but a lot of times since the mechanics are about finding out where the virus is, you focus on that. And if you're a good guy, your point is find out where it is and then don't let anyone know. So at the end, you can get your other good guys to try to put that person out the airlock, even if it happens to be a good guy. So, but I have not played this game yet where after the first one, people weren't like, okay, let's play it again.
Yeah.
You know, and it has that addiction to it. It's like, okay, I got it. Let's do this again. Let's do this again.
Totally.
So, and it fits in a little dice bag. Like, I can carry it around. There's some cards that go along with it too, but you throw those in sleeves, you throw the dice and the cards in the dice bag, and you can carry it anywhere.
Awesome.
It's definitely coming on the wedding cruise.
Oh, good times.
All right, Kitty, give us one.
All right. So my pick is Insider.
Ooh.
For best kind of party game, like not serious gaming game.
Yeah.
And I went back and forth between Werewords and Insider because they are so similar, but I'm sticking with Insider. I liked it better. It was cleaner, so easy to play, so much fun, and you can really kind of do it yourself version of this game. This game is begging for an app, is what Insider needs, that you can play it on a phone super quick. But yeah.
Yeah, honestly, you could use the Werewords app for this.
True.
Because the Werewords app, all it's doing is generating words.
And a timer.
And a timer. So I think, and I also agree, I think Insider is better than Werewords in just the fact that it's simpler. It's more elegant. Werewords tries to add a few extra components on top of it. So if you got bored with Insider, you could possibly go with that.
But I feel like I wouldn't pull out Werewords in such a serious gaming situation that I wouldn't just want to play Insider.
Right.
Like if you're playing a game like that, it's a low-key kind of a gaming event.
Yep. I would say with Insider, if or with Werewords, because Insider's kind of hard to find. If you can find it, great. But if you can't, play Werewords without the seer, without the roles, essentially.
Yeah.
You just have, I guess you just have the werewolf, because the werewolf knows the word.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing you have. And don't use anything else. That's it.
And then everyone's trying to find the werewolf at the end.
Yeah.
I guess you have to have a mayor. A mayor and a werewolf.
Well, the mayor is...
And they should not be...
Is the person with the word, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And they should not be the same person.
Yes. So in Insider, if you are the person giving the clues, you can't be the Insider.
Yeah.
In Werewords, if you're the person giving the clues, you could be the werewolf.
And I thought that got a little confusing. And with Insider, it felt like there was always kind of like a neutral party there to... Because they did get to vote still on who the Insider was. There was the definitely more of an observation role to that character, which I really liked.
Yep. And in case we haven't, we might have been talking around it.
Yeah.
Insider and Werewords are both 20 questions with a little bit of words around it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with like
a little bit of rules around
hidden,
it.
Hidden role, essentially. Yeah. If someone has already seen the word at the beginning and is helping the group get there, and they are the Insider. But yeah, we've had so much fun with this game. Like
It
plays so quickly, like you said. It's a few minutes each round. I never get that feeling I get with some of the hardcore social deduction games where I'm like, oh no, I'm the bad guy and I'm stressed about it. Like I am never stressed being the bad guy in Insider.
This is a game where if you've had a couple drinks, you don't feel like you're going to like be terrible at it.
Yeah.
If fact, anything, you might get better.
It makes it better. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and this is one of those things where there is that hidden role, but the hidden role is there to help you, but you don't want anyone to know that you're helping them. Like yeah. it's
fun to play the Insider. Yeah. Yeah. It's not stressful the way that being the werewolf is stressful.
Yeah. Yep. So it's just this twist on it that makes it like really, I don't know. It's just very cool. So my next one is in the point salad category and is Great Western Trail. I did not think that I would like this game as nearly as much as I do. I picked it up. I'm not a big Western person. I'm not a big cowboys and cattle and any of that kind of stuff. But when I played this game, I'm like, this game is just awesome. It takes a little bit to set up. I can set it up in probably 5 or 6 minutes. But that's because I put it away where I just like hand out a bunch of components, dump some stuff on the board and you're good to go. But it has deck building in it. It has very, very light worker placement where you have one worker, basically your cowboy, and you get to choose one, you know, three different spaces based on your move. If you have a move of three, you can pick up to three different spaces to land on as you step through the Great Western Trail. There's a tableau building. So as you get to the end of different things, you pull tokens off of your tableau, which unlocks better powers or makes powers, not necessarily powers, but abilities stronger. There's like this just management of... there's goals. So, right, you have to manage, do I want to go through hazards? Do I want to put my buildings in places where there's hazards? Will it give me a little bit of a bump, but it'll keep other people from going on there. But then they could put hazards in front of me. So maybe that's not where I want to go. But if I put my building here, then they have to pay me money when I go through it. There's just so much
to
think about.
There's a lot of choices to make.
This is a classic Chris game. It's just, you know, there's so much
going on. I feel like
this
would paralyze Josh, though.
I haven't played it yet.
You haven't played it yet. Yeah. The thing is, there are so many things to think about.
It would paralyze Josh.
We got to try it.
We got to try it. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I assume that that's
because
correct. Yeah.
I will say there are a lot of things you can do.
Uh-huh.
But on your turn, you make one choice.
That's true.
You have your guy on a tile, and you can move him one space forward, two spaces forward, or three spaces forward. Mm. Sometimes there's branches.
You usually have a choice to make.
Sure.
And of that choice, you get to place something in a place. There's like 8 choices to make every turn, Chris. You are not thinking
the
turn
through. No wonder he loves it.
And I liked it a lot. This was actually like I'm giving it an honorable mention, almost made my list, but I don't think it's a Josh-style game. I think this is going to be, like, Terraforming Mars level paralyzing.
Yeah.
I don't know, Josh. I'm going to challenge you with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I still enjoy Terraforming Mars, yeah. But it definitely triggered that analysis paralysis going on in me, but I did enjoy the game. So, I want to try it. I want to see, but I think
I want to be there to watch it.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
I think it's fantastic. Now, there's another game I'm going to mention that Josh can't come anywhere near ever, but right now, I think that this one might not be that bad. It really might not be.
Well, I don't think it's the worst game you could do that with. But I think that, if decision making and like taking your time on your turn is where you feel like this isn't my strength, this might not be the best pick for you.
Well, it's also point salad. And there are, I think, 8 or 9 different ways to get points. There actually might even be more than that. There might be 10 or 12 different categories that you're scoring at the end of the game. So it's really hard to say, okay, how many points do I have? What's going to get me more points? How is this going to work here? You're kind of balancing all these different things because ultimately you just want points. Yeah. But the game, the faster people go through the trail, the faster the game ends. The slower people go through, the slower the game ends. So if everyone's moving just like 1 or 2 steps each time, the game could take a long time. If everyone's moving their max, the game can be over relatively quick.
It was very frustrating because I feel like I played with you and Spencer. Was Sydney playing with us too?
She might have been.
But you guys were like racing through and I was trying to take my time. And then I was like, I need to start moving faster because if I don't start doing these things, I'm not going to have any points by the end of the game. And it's just like, I don't like it when somebody else's strategy
affects what you want to do.
Deeply affects my, like, I don't care if your strategy, like, you know, you're taking limited resources. That's like kind of the point of a lot of these games. But when it's like, I like to play a leisurely game and you guys are making it like a sprint through, it like turns it into a different feel of game completely.
Yeah. Well, I blame Spencer for that because he was racing through as fast as he possibly could.
So he didn't have to play anymore?
Well, we weren't really sure. Spencer's a hard one to read, but he says he liked the game.
I think he liked it. Yeah. Okay. This one he did. He enjoys Westerns, so I think it got him, like the theme got him in a little bit more than some of the other games we've played. And also it is a fun game.
Right. No, I hear. I mean, you know, Chris doesn't gush about every game, and he was really gushing about this one when you first played it. So I'm keen to try it. I started to think, I wonder if it would help my analysis paralysis if I know that it's a game coming up like this, that I do some homework on it before I play it.
Yeah.
Because I think almost every time we've played one of these, get ready, I'm going to explain to you the 100 choices you're going to have to make in this game. I'm learning it for the first time, and that's part of why I'm so slow with it as added on. But if I watch some playthroughs, I think it might work. But
watch it played, yes, which is really good.
Before
we play it, and they give you a good background. Sweet. All right, Josh, give us another one.
All right. Well, actually, I did have Insider on my list, so good shout. I had that on there as well. But I'm going to have to go with Witch Hunt, which is another social deduction game, but I can't not talk about Witch Hunt because
I was really surprised when you said Burke's Gambit that you didn't say Witch Hunt.
Right. Yeah. Well, I wanted to
know
that
it was coming.
Yeah. I wanted to leave.
The categories are small group social deduction, Burke's Gambit, large group social deduction, Witch Hunt.
Yeah. Really large. This, I think, because we were playing with the creator of the game and he was saying, I think it can go up to like 20 or 22. He designed it with that in mind that it could scale to crazy numbers. But essentially, it's a lot like Ultimate Werewolf, if you've ever played that. So there's tons of, it's the werewolf type game where you have good guys and bad guys. Well, the bad guys are witches in this case, but then you've got a bunch of extra roles, and those roles aren't tied to your allegiance. So you could be a good, gravekeeper is one of the roles, or you could be a bad bodyguard
knight or something.
Yeah, right. But the thing about it, again, that I loved was that you had more information in this game. A lot of the special roles could do seer type things. They're seeing the people who die, for instance, every night. They get to know that information. Who were they? What were their allegiance? And everyone has these powers, and using their powers, they can learn things about other people in the game. And all this information starts to spread out amongst the players and you're starting to piece it together. It's really, really like a detective, you know, situation unfolding before your eyes.
More actual fact deduction as opposed to social, entirely based in social deductions.
Right, exactly. You're not just purely reading people's faces and saying, oh no, I'm great at reading people and I play with this guy all the time. I know when he's lying. Because I've heard that said in Werewolf so many times. I know. It's like, you don't know. Yes, you played lots of games with him and I saw you last time say you know as well and you got it wrong. You didn't know that time. And at least in this game, there is some information. You can't always trust the information you're getting, but it's something.
But there can always be something there.
And we had some crazy, crazy, you know, moments when we were playing Origins. Me and Sydney were playing till like 6 a.m. And we had these just like crazy revelations. You know, it got down to the final three. It was me, Sydney, and this one other guy. And Sydney and this other guy had both, to me, seemed concretely trustworthy the whole way through. They'd been feeding me such accurate information, both of them. And yet one of them was bad. And it was like a real like Inception or Usual Suspects moments where you wake up on the last night and you're like, no, it can't be me and you two. You two were completely safe. My whole world is crumbling around me. Which one of you is it? But it was so good. I love this game so much. I don't think I'll be playing Werewolf again unless I have to. If I've got the option to play Witch Hunt over Werewolf, I'll always pick it.
All right. I did enjoy it as well, and I would agree the same way. If there's Witch Hunt or Werewolf, I'd rather play Witch Hunt.
Definitely.
So, all right, Kitty, give us one.
All right, I am going with Tournament at Camelot for my favorite trick-taking game. I feel like trick-taking games, I've seen a lot more of them coming out recently than I had in the past. And this one, I just think is so much fun. I love that it's... you don't have to necessarily play with four people, although I think it does work best at four. I think it's 3 to 5 players with a few modifications to the game, and it plays just as well with 5 players. I think 3 is a little bit iffy, but I love it. So it's trick-taking. You have your suits, but the trump is different, and they're battles, so you're trying to take the least amount of damage, and... it's King Arthur themed, so you all get to play a King Arthur character with special powers, and all the special powers get to do crazy, really fun, cool things. So,
and there's a level up mechanic for your special power.
Yes, so you can gain a companion. When you lose so much health, you unlock another special ability. So it's like a catch-up thing once you start to lose, but then once everyone gets back to your level, then everyone gets more powerful and the game just gets crazier.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it is a fun game. There's some swinginess to it. There's some slight kind of rules questions worded weird on the cards. But honestly, BGG, the designer, was kind of clarifying a lot of those things. There's an FAQ out there. So like once you master those just kind of slight nuances and questions, it's the game at its core is like a fun.
I had fun playing it. Yeah, I think we only played it that once, and it was the first time playing it. And I think that's why I struggled, because I was just not understanding the strategy, not understanding the powers. But once you have that knowledge after the first play, I think it, like, the core mechanics of the game are really, really cool.
But Kitty, you've played it many times now, right? You played it with your family.
I have not pulled it out since Origins, but I played it twice there, and I loved it both times.
Yeah. I know Spencer was texting me, like, talking about that game. It's like, oh, we could do some variations, we could do this, and we could
do that. He's really excited to make his own trick-taking game. This, like, I think really inspired him, but his game has taken on a whole new life of its own. It's going to be World War I skinned, but yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's pretty psyched about it.
Oh, I'm excited as well.
All right, I'm going to mention, I have so many games to mention, we're running low on time. I do have to mention, for Sydney, Starving Artist. This game has become her go-to game, like, always. Like, want to play Starving Artist? Want to play Starving Artist? Let's play a game of Starving Artist. And it is a really, really good game. It won an award on the Game Crafter. I think we've talked about it briefly before. All the cards represent, like, classic works of art. And you have a bag where you're drawing colored cubes from it. you're trying to complete these works of art by putting these colored cubes, so each one will have X number of cubes.
And they don't just represent the works of art. The actual work of art is there. It's the whole card.
Yep.
And, you know, you've even got the name of the artist and stuff on there, right?
Yep. And there's just a few colored boxes that are, like, transparently overlaid on top of the art. So you're trying to sell enough paintings before you starve. You're trying to get to a certain number of points before anyone else, or to a certain number of paintings completed before anyone else, and you win the game. It plays great at 2 to 4. Actually, I think it just goes 2 to 4. And it plays fast. It's maybe 15, 20 minutes. So that one's for Sydney. I enjoy it quite a bit.
I really liked it.
But I do it in moderation. I do it when there's new players around.
It kind of gave me that Splendor feel a little bit. It's different, but it had that feeling to it to me. And that's why I think I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Now, I really want to play.
As soon as she gets back.
I have to go upstairs and find pizza.
All right. We'll find a time to play it. But my last game that I want to talk about is Star Wars Rebellion, which is a 2-player, 6-hour-long game.
The miniatures looked crazy for that thing.
The board takes up pretty much... I have like a 4.5-foot by 4.5-foot table. The game takes up pretty much the entire table. It's head-to-head. You can do it in teams, but the team play is absolutely pointless. Just you play it head-to-head. Sydney and I have played probably 3 or 4 games of this. Most of those games were split over 2 days. So we played like 2 or 3 hours the first day and then 2 or 3 hours the second day and finish it up.
Wow.
One person plays the light side. One person plays the dark side. The light side person is trying to...
They're called Jedis, Chris.
Well, not necessarily, because you have...
Or the Rebellion.
You have the Rebellion. You have the Jedis. Empire. You have Empires. You have Imperial Forces and then the Sith. But for the most part, it's good guys versus bad guys. Bad guys have just tons of troops. They can like go over. And what they're doing is they're looking for the rebel base. The rebels have their base hidden someplace. And they're just looking to like, you know, take little pot shots at the Empire and trying to incite the people to rise up and, you know, go against the Empire.
It's very like the actual Star Wars.
It plays when you're done. You can kind of see the movie scenes in your head about how it all played out.
Right.
Like it is an epic game. There's an expansion coming out at Gen Con, I believe, which I will be picking up, which modifies combat a little bit to make the combat a little bit more cinematic. I don't think it's bad now, but I can see where if they wanted to add a little bit more, you know, cool features and twist to combat, it could certainly work. But I love this game.
I want to say the miniatures are kind of quite unique. I mean, when I just glanced over, it seemed like they were sort of bigger and bolder than the average miniature that I normally see.
Fantasy Flight does crazy good productions on pretty much all of their games,
right?
Like, and these are really sizey, like Death Stars and
some
ships
of them are
and
they're
really
tall.
Well, like if you watch the movies and then you see the pieces, you're like, I know what these are already. Like, you don't need to tell me what my pieces are. I know these pieces.
They look badass. Yeah.
Yep. And there's a dice mechanic to it, which actually the dice mechanic's pretty cool. Fantasy Flight loves custom dice. Like, you'll never see a 6-sided dice, but these are 6-sided dice, but they all have different symbols and different things on them. And a quick honorable mention to Star Wars The Living Card Game, also by Fantasy Flight. Sydney and I have played a game of that every night since I cleaned off my shelves. So
it's a
game that is quite a bit fun. There are some problems with it. It's not as popular as some of the other living card games from Fantasy Flight, but it's a good one. Shane Poole sent us an email Board Game Geek post. So I want to read his post here. Focusing on games that flew under the radar. I think this is a good category. I didn't even really think of it. But he says Technoball, an easy-to-learn football game that parodies teams and players from the NFL. Great rule set, which has been clearly play-tested extremely well. The value for your money is amazing. You get all 32 complete teams. Don't have to pay for expansions, star players, or wait ages for them to come out like Blood Bowl, which I still need to play Blood Bowl. You also have several different game modes, and they all bring their own challenges and fun to them. So that is Technoball, which it's based off of there's a video game series of the same name, so I'm assuming that they're based off of it. This one the next one, I'm like, because I've been seeing this, but now based on Shane's recommendation, I may pick it up, and that's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the board game. He says, first, I'm not a Buffy fan. I purchased this on a whim for a wife, for the wife to enjoy, since she plays a ton of what I want all the time. I was shocked at how fun this co-op was. Each player has different skills, and each enemy brings their own challenges. I think the rule book is well laid out, and there are several ways you can enhance the game to make it even more challenging. After playing several scenarios, I'm about to break down and marathon the show. When you get to the musical episode, shoot me an email, because that is the best episode of all TV ever.
That's, I think I'm going to wait for Angel the board game to come out, because, you know, it's probably going to be a bit better.
Ooh, burn.
Just kidding. I love Buffy, too.
The last one, I'm not... I guess it has to be based on something, because it's called Summit, the board game. He says this game has three different modes, solo, co-op, and competitive. Each mode plays out very well and is super fun. My only issue with the rule is with the rule book. The game is amazing. It is one of the only games I have ever seen that can have three different game modes and not fall short somewhere. So, Shane, thank you. I think those are... I'm definitely going to check out these games now, because good games that are under the radar should be things that we all pay attention to.
Oh, yeah.
We got some others I just want to throw out there. Caleb loves Clank, Terraforming Mars, Adrenaline, which is another one I need to play, because I've not heard a bad thing about Adrenaline. It's like a first-person shooter on a board game. Also, Inish and Project Elite, which is another game I need to check out. Steve mentions Burning Suns, a Dudes on a Map Kickstarter that recently got fulfilled. Star Wars Rebellion, one for me. And Zaya with the expansion. It kind of fixes a lot of things and does a lot of... allows you to do random mitigation. It's a very random game, Zaya, but the idea is like to kind of set yourself up so the randomness doesn't screw you over.
Oh, interesting.
David says Ethnos. Ethnos almost made my list. We've played that a number of times. It's so easy to learn. It's the variety is there because you're playing with like a subset of the number of cards each time you play. It's very, very, I don't even want to say area control. It's more like stack management, more or less. But it's a fantastic game. He also likes Role Player, and Role Player has an expansion coming up. So looking forward to that. He's also looking forward to Restorations Games' new release of Indulgence. So Restoration Games is going back and redoing a bunch of old games and then republishing them. So the same person,
the classic ones, or
yeah, so probably not like Milton Bradley Hasbro type stuff, right. But like Indulgence was a game I think in the 80s.
Okay.
And I want to say Rob Davio, the person who did Pandemic Legacy, all the legacy games, this is his company. So he's taking these old games and then kind of developing them into what a modern game would be, but right. Still keeping all of the old flair to it. So just kind of like upgrading components and stuff, not so much changing rules.
Nice.
Michael, this is like a lightning round because we're a little over on time. Michael's favorite games are Cry Havoc, which again, almost made my list. So did Arkham Horror, the card game.
We're going to have to talk about Chris's ability to count to three.
These are honorable mentions. He also likes Harry Potter, Battle at Hogwarts. A expansion's coming out at Gen Con for that one. And for deck building, Vikings Gone Wild. Actually, Harry Potter and Vikings Gone Wild are both deck building, but he's like, Vikings Gone Wild is just a little bit higher than Harry Potter. And he's also looking forward to First Martians at Gen Con, which I've played, and I would like to play it. That one is one I need to play a few more times before I can decide. I feel like I'm just going, two more. Aaron, Conan. All of the dungeon crawl type of games, it's the only one where the players can creatively pull off crazy stunts just for the funness of it. So I've heard this about Conan. The rules are such where you can just do really wacky, crazy things. It's a big box game, and I'm like, I've heard too many good things. I'm going to end up buying this. And then finally, Jason, Starwork Rebellion, Burke's Gambit, and Not Alone.
Almost made my list.
That one is a good one.
It was really fun. Yeah.
Did you take it?
I didn't, because it wasn't in your...
It's in, done it's with in my it. Middle
it's in your,
pile.
It's in your... I can't think of the
yeah.
word.
I'm going to... Yeah, if you want that one, I'm going to give it to you. So, because it's just on the cusp of like staying in my collection or not. But if you like it, then it goes to your collection. It might as I'll well be it. In my collection. All right, done.
We made it.
We did it, man.
Yeah. I really like games. In this past year... Last 52 weeks have been really, really cool as we've been ramping up the amount of games we've been playing. Except for you, Josh.
What do you mean?
You started out living here and we played games all the time. And that's now you true. Don't live here and you travel on the weekends all the time. And I don't get to play games with you as
well,
much.
Well, we're going to have to change that then. We're going to have to make it work it out.
Yeah, maybe at Gen Con. Oh, wait.
I'm not coming to Gen Con because I'm going to the most spectacular show on Earth.
Watching the moon.
Hosted by the moon.
Got it.
And the sun.
Yeah, so everyone should know.
GameholeCon, though.
GameholeCon.
We should have lots of time to play games there.
Yep.
Which weekend is it again?
First weekend of November.
Yes.
Madison, Wisconsin.
Madison, Wisconsin.
Sweet.
Anyone who's interested in playing a game with Josh.
That's where you can do it.
That's going to be your only chance.
Yeah, you're hosting a bunch of them. So.
Oh, I'm ready.
Yeah, just saying. Again, a big thank you to all of our patrons. We haven't gotten any new reviews in the past 4 weeks, so that makes me a little sad on the inside. But if someone wanted to leave us a review, I would be happy to say thank you for that review right in this particular segment.
good, if you're interested, good emotional blackmail.
I love it. See what I did there? If you're interested in supporting us, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon and help us out a little bit there. Most of that goes right back to you guys as we do contests and giveaways.
So many giveaways.
Love giving stuff away. And I think that is a show, Josh.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jim Jam.
Try that again.
Emil Jill Jam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, and Jeremy Fisher. Until next week, when we talk to you from Gen Con, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So Josh, you're gonna FaceTime in for the show?
I will try to. Wait, which day is it?
It's Friday night.
Oh yeah, we can do that.
Like Friday at 6 p.m. Central.
Let's do it.
All right, I'm gonna call you in. And the audience won't be able to hear you, but we'll be able to record it.
Let's do it.
All right, done.